Of course, it's a Jew, no? Joel Benjamin.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
There was writing, I think, that by this John Henderson.
Yeah, so this is giving an idea of what fantastic liars the Jews are. I mean, it's almost unbelievable. The latest.
Okay, the first, the earlier one, it was, that was a lie about chess, no? About chess tables, about chess cross tables and standing, yeah?
That was from inside chess.
Okay, that's about chess. This one is no longer chess, no? This is even.
Yeah, this is more personal. This is from a magazine called Chess. This is from England. This is January 2001. And on the cover, it's got this Jew, Joel Benjamin. He's an American Jew.
Yeah.
And also, this magazine is completely Jewish. It was founded by the Jew, B.H. Wood.
Right, right.
And B, as I explained, stands for Baruch, which is a Jew name. Baruch Spinoza, right?
Right.
His original name was Baruch Spinoza. He changed it later to Benedict Spinoza, but his original name was Baruch Spinoza. Okay, look what they say. I mean, this is almost on the level of Elvis sightings, huh?
Mm.
This is like Elvis stuff, right?
What? Elvis Presley.
Yeah, they say somebody says they saw him the other day in a diner in Michigan or something, right?
Yeah.
Look at this. I also heard that recently Fisher had come back into the U.S. through Seattle to attend his sister's funeral. Fearing recognition by the more stringent immigration officials, U.S. Tax Department still have an arrest warrant out in his name for breaking the U.N. sanction when he played in Spassky in 1992 in war-torn Yugoslavia. I'm reading it just the way it is here, when he played in Spassky in 1992 at the airports. He drove in and out of the country by car through the Canadian border with Seattle. The USCIS also recently made him an outrageous offer of $100,000 to appear for just 3 hours online at the relaunch of their website, www.uschess.org, which he refused to do. All lies. Total lies. I did not come back to the States for my sister's funeral. I haven't been back to the States since 1992.
Yes.
I left it around July 92. I haven't been back since then. In December 92, they issued a arrest warrant on my name.
All right.
Furthermore, this $100,000, the offer from the U.S. Cheshire is all lies, too. Just lying and lying and lying. It's no big deal to them.
Lies and lies and more lies, you know.
Also, the U.S. Tax Department still have an arrest warrant. No, this is the U.S. government. The Treasury Department was the one who wrote me the letter, right?
Yeah.
They said this arrest warrant is based on my violating the sanctions against Yugoslavia. Nothing to do with taxes. Mm-hmm. The tax people have not contacted me at all. Then there is no case against me for not paying taxes.
Oh.
Yeah, they keep talking about how I owe tax money, but the U.S. government has not done anything regarding this, whether I owe them tax money or not.
Yeah.
It's all lies about the taxes.
Yeah.
You know, there is no warrant for my arrest, no case against me for not paying taxes.
So, okay, since we have touched this talk, so that concerns your government, buddy.
Yeah, yeah.
And you told me, I remember, I think that before the election, just before the election, you told me that, you know, Eugene, there is no difference between the Republican and the Democratic Party. You're not telling me this.
Well, that's really not quite true, Eugene.
And then you're telling me last night it's really not true. What do you mean?
Well,
not true?
I've been thinking it over. There is a difference between the Republicans.
So you were wrong. You were wrong.
Well, you see, let me give you an example. The Republican Party, they want to put me in prison for 10 years on trumped up charges, right?
Right. When was this?
This was George Bush Sr. back in 1992, right?
He's from Republican, yeah?
Right. But the Democratic Party has a completely different policy towards me. They just want to rob everything I've worked for all my life. So you can't say the Republican and the Democratic Party are completely the same.
But well, did well, but very negative against you.
Oh yeah, that's
okay. Touching on this a little bit of politics, yeah.
Yeah.
You told me also last night that this regarding the you wanted to talk about Boutros Ghali. Was he a former UN secretary? No.
Yes, Boutros. Yes. You know, I was reading on my last call up in the Baguio.
I know. I heard yeah. of his name before. Yeah.
Yeah. That you know, the US blackballed Boutros Ghali from being re-elected to General Secretary of the UN, right?
Right.
But the U.S. admitted they didn't want him to be re-elected, right? And they favored this Kofi Annan, right?
Kofi Annan.
Yeah.
You know, actually, Rabbi, there was also some opinion here that former President Fidel Ramos was ripe to become UN Secretary because it was scheduled for Asia already.
Oh.
But because of the good performance of Secretary Annan, then he was re-elected, or, you know.
Oh, that's interesting, yeah. That's another proof that Ramos is the U.S.'s boy, no? Okay. Now, why did the U.S. push Boutros Ghali out?
Why?
This has never been revealed, I mean, this is not revealed in the press. I will tell you why.
Why?
Well, first of all, the Jews thought they would easily control Boutros Ghali because he's not a Muslim, he is a Coptic Christian.
Hmm.
But also, his wife is Jewish.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh.
So they thought they had him in the bag. But what happened was, the Band of State of Israel, attacked a UN-protected refugee camp in Lebanon, if you remember.
Right.
Some years back, right?
Actually, in the BBC, just a few weeks ago, there was a series or documentary about it.
Oh, yeah. Anyway, the Jews attacked. They killed, I think, several hundred refugees there, men, women, and children.
Yeah.
And these are mostly older people.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, women, children, and older men.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the Jews made always a mistake. We thought there were weapons in there. We didn't know, you know?
Yeah.
We didn't know. It was all a mistake. So then, Boutros Ghali, the Arabs of the world was very angry, so they decided to have an investigation in the UN about it, right?
Right.
And the Jews, the U.S. pressured Boutros Ghali to kill the investigation. There should not be any investigation. Even an investigation is anti-Semitic, right?
Right.
But they went in with the investigation, and the investigation of this incident, the report said it was not an accident. It was a deliberate attack by Israel, and it was deliberate slaughter, murder of these innocent men, women, and children in this refugee camp, right?
Oh, right.
And that is the reason, because he didn't stop this report from coming out, that they pushed Boutros Ghali out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh.
You know?
And how about this,
he's from Egypt.
No, he's from Egypt.
From Egypt, right. And there was another case. You know why Kurt de Waldheim was persecuted after he left the UN General Secretary?
He's also secretary, yeah?
He was before.
Before who's this?
I don't know.
I think after, no? After.
No, he was much earlier than Boutros Ghali.
Yeah.
He was back quite some time ago. But anyway, the point is, why was he persecuted after he left that post?
Why?
You remember that he said he was a foreign Nazi, a Nazi
terrorist? Right, I remember that.
He said he should resign from the Austrian presidency,
right.
Not allowed to enter the U.S., and all this. What
right.
was that all about?
What?
They claim they discovered things about his Nazi past, which is nonsense, because he was thoroughly investigated before he became General Secretary of the U.N., like all people who are going to get such an important post, right?
Yeah, so what was the...
The reason why they attacked him after he left, the reason why they tried to destroy him,
yeah.
was very similar. During his time as being General Secretary, there was a resolution passed that Zionism is racism.
Really?
Yes. And the Jews tried everything to stop that resolution, but they failed. And of course, they blamed Kurt Waldheim on letting that resolution get passed. And that was later rescinded during the Bush senior administration of the presidency. The UN rescinded that
Okay, but where did you get this information?
But no, this is all on the record.
Oh, no.
Well, I mean, I'm just putting it all together.
Ah, okay. Ah,
yeah. Quite obvious.
It's like analyzing a chess game, no?
Yeah.
And,
in other words, they only want stooges. If you're not a stooge for the Jews, if you're not a stooge for the Americans, you're a criminal. You're a monster. You're evil. You're a horrible person, like me.
You
know.
You mean this new, the re-elected one, Annan, is a stooge?
Absolute stooge. You know, this guy is totally in the U.S.'s pocket, in the Jews' pocket. He's a professional U.N. man. He's been there all his life, a career man. It's very interesting, his face and his expression. He looks exactly like Kampelmeyer. Exactly. I mean, he's black, this Annan. Kampelmeyer is not black, but exactly. I think they've both been trained by the same school. I really do. He has the same mannerisms as Kampelmeyer.
Yeah.
Quite amazing, yeah. And now, because he does what the U.S. wants, this man, you know what they say about him?
Yeah.
Here's a clipping from the Philippine Daily Inquirer, July 1st, 2001. Saint-like Annan, re-elected.
Yeah, that's very nice.
Saint-like. You know?
Right.
He's a crook. He's no saint to me. He's a bastard, this Annan. He's a criminal.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, well, you wanted to, for a lighter side again, you told me there are two ways, you teach me, there are two ways to get rich.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I like to be rich, Bobby.
Okay, so this is from Fortune magazine, June 12, 2000.
Yeah.
It's an article by somebody called N. Gregory Mankiw. He looks like a Jew. The article is called First Principles, Ukraine, How Not to Run an Economy.
Mm.
Here's what he says. In this world, there are two ways to get rich. Number one, produce something valuable and sell it to others. Number two, find people pursuing the first strategy and steal from them.
Oh,
yeah. Just steal. Yeah, that's the Jewish way.
Oh.
They're parasites. They produce nothing of value themselves, but they steal the labor and the property and everything from others. See?
Oh, but that's not a good recommendation, eh? Because you steal other property. Oh, but actually that happened to you, huh?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh.
So it shows the Jews know exactly what they're about.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. The second one, of course, is no sweat, you know, no sweat.
Yeah, yeah.
So regarding this, you want to touch on this Frank Brady?
Yes.
Because this...
I think, Eugene, this is a really interesting case.
Right.
Because this guy convicts himself from his own mouth, but he is so corrupt that he doesn't even realize it.
The Frank Brady...
No, this is about Frank Brady. I'll explain what this is.
Yeah.
This is from, again, an article in Chess, this Jew British magazine.
Yeah, the British one.
Yeah, this is Chess, September 2000. And this is that article by C.P. Revilius called Prisoner of the Millennium, A Perspective on the Fisher Interviews by C.P. Revilius.
You are the prisoner?
Yeah.
Of the Millennium,
right.
Okay.
Right. That was my joke. He's trying to turn around and use for himself. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, let me read all this, because I think this is just so instructive. How corrupt and rotten the Jews are. This chest, as I explained, is a completely Jew publication.
Right.
In this issue, it's got the dirty Jew, John Spielman, on the cover. Kinky haired Jew with thick glasses. He's one of the people who forged the Batsford edition of my 60 memorable games.
All right.
Gave me no money and completely ruined the book.
All right.
And did it all without my permission. So let me read what Revilius says here. Frank Brady, you are no friend of mine. They're quoting me. See? Incidentally, you can't trust any of the quotes by Revilius that he has taken from my interviews on the radio.
Mm.
Some of them are accurate, many of them are not.
All right.
Okay, Frank Brady, you are no friend of mine. Thus far, we have been looking at the big picture. I'll skip ahead just to save time what he says here. Okay. Fisher's current view of Brady is succinctly summed up in a passage in Interview 7. He's got a very Irish-sounding name, but he's a damn Jew, believe it or not. And that book is full of lies. Once past his curt dismissal, however, we are offered an interesting new perspective on an incident from the early pages of Profile of a Prodigy. Readers of the book will remember that in the summer of 1959, Bobby was accompanied by Brady to a meeting with a businessman. I'll call him Mr. Blanker, who offered to finance his participation in the forthcoming candidate tournament in Yugoslavia in return for a promise that in any subsequent press interview he would say, "I couldn't have won this tournament without the help of Stan Blanker." In Brady's version, Fisher rises to his feet and rejects the proposal in a suspiciously well-crafted speech, ending with the ringing declaration, "If I win a tournament, I win by myself. Nobody helps me." He and Brady then say their goodbyes and make their way past staring clerks to the elevator. Bobby didn't say anything, neither did I. I was proud to be in the same building with him. Did this happen? Or rather, did it happen in the way Brady describes? According to Fisher, so far from giving Blanker a big, long speech, he kept his explanation for Brady. I will tell you exactly what happened. I went up there, I listened to the guy respectfully, I didn't like his attitude, I didn't like his vainglorious approach. He just wanted to advertise himself or his company. And I said no, and that was it. As we were going down the stairs and leaving the building, I started to explain to Brady why I didn't accept. And he took my explanation and turned it around and had me give the guy a speech. Interview 7. Of the two versions on offer, it is Fisher's relatively downbeat account which strikes me as the more persuasive. Fisher has always been his own man, but would a 16-year-old, whatever his degree of self-possession, have come out with a speech of the kind Brady puts into his mouth? And why were the clerks staring? Could they at this point have known what was going on in Mr. Blanker's inner sanctum? I should add that in indicating a preference for Fisher's version of the Blanker incident over Brady's, I in no way seek to diminish the substantive merits of Brady's book. Mm. There are contentious episodes in most biographies, particularly where human memory is the only authority for the events described. Future writers on Fisher will need to weigh both accounts and reach their own conclusions. Now, he's saying he believes my version.
Right.
Yet, and this is a monstrous lie if my version is correct, right?
Right.
You know, she's transposing the conversation I had with him and making I'm giving to somebody else, right?
Mm.
Only a crook would do something like that, right?
Mm.
But nonetheless, he still thinks it's a good book. People should read this book, you know? He doesn't think this totally discredits Brady. Todd doesn't think this totally discredits the book.
Yeah.
This, to me, shows, he didn't mean to show it, but it shows the absolutely low morals of my critics and my enemies.
Right.
Unbelievable. Absolutely unbelievable. He convinced himself out of his own mouth.
Right. Just by listening
But it shows how lightly my enemies, the Jews, take lying. It's not a big deal to them.
No big lie.
No. Lying is a way of life for them. It's a part of they consider life to be like war. I think someone said about the Jews that they refuse to play the great game of life according to the rules. I think this is a perfect example. They don't think it's a big deal, lying.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. You mentioned also this... I didn't know you were following some articles in the Philippine newspapers or some columns, you know.
Yeah.
And you also read this one in Philippine Daily Inquirer. Father Orbos.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. But it's a good thing you follow developments and opinions here in...
I really, really love your newspapers, not just because of what they say about the Philippines, but what they say about all the world. You know, I love your columnists.
Oh.
Even though they don't, you know, hit the Jews like I would like them to, and they don't hit the U.S. as much as I'd like them to, they are just so brilliant, so colorful, so erudite. You know, I just love reading their... So humorous, especially, you know?